The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Into ESPN FC. What a day of football we have to look back on. That's myself, Kay Murray, Stevie Nicol and Shaka Hislop. We'll also be hearing from Dan Thomas and the team in Barcelona in just a moment. And we'll be looking back on the game that you just saw too between Atleti and Real Sociedad. But let's start with the biggest game of the day. It was at the Camp Nou. It was Barcelona against Real Madrid. And all eyes on these two sides. 25th minute. And this is one that will not be forgotten soon from Sergiño Dest. He misses an absolute sitter.
Yeah, he almost had so long to wait for the ball to come to him that he just loses his composure and swings at it and he doesn't control it. It's a wild swing at the end of it and it's well over the crossbar. That, without question, has to be, at the very least, on target.
And you can see what the Barcelona fans in New York thought about that. When chances come in El Clasico, you have to take them. Then, not less than 10 minutes later, it goes up the other end. And David Alaba, in what was his first Clasico, certainly makes his mark, Shaka.
And the game, this play starts with David Alaba taking the ball off of Memphis Depay. Mingueza doesn't do a good job against Vinicius Jr. in midfield. Memphis leaves Alaba. Alaba has space. Finds time, settles himself, and look at that for a strike. Ball barely moving in the air.
Happy times in the Playwright Irish pub in New York with the Peña Madridista celebrating that goal. There was to be another couple of goals. They came in stoppages, the first of them for Lucas Vázquez.
Well, that's what happens when you follow the ball in. Unfortunately for Barca, Eric Garcia doesn't follow in early enough. He just gets caught, and that's game, set, and match.
And maybe Shaka, Sergiño Dest can at least take the fact that he had an assist on the consolation goal for Aguero.
Well, scant consolation indeed. Better to see Aguero on the score sheet than anything else that this stands for. But for that other opportunity of the other end, just maybe Barca grab a point, but no. Real deservedly take all 3 points.
And that's four straight wins for Real Madrid in El Clasico and back-to-back wins in the Camp Nou in the league for the first time since the 1960s. After the game, Arsid Lowe got some reaction, starting with David Alaba, the goal scorer.
Your first Clasico, the ball drops to you in the penalty area with a chance to shoot. What's going through your mind?
To score. 100% to score. When I saw that open space in front of me, Rodri gave me the ball. I controlled it and just wanted to score. And I'm very glad that things happened that way.
The very fact that you were in the Barcelona penalty area, I think, tells us something about the way that Madrid played, that every time you counter-attacked, people came out really, really quickly up the pitch. Was that part of a clear plan to try and exploit that space, particularly on the left-hand side?
One of our plans for sure. We wanted to be very stable in the back, wanted to be to have a really good balance in our defense, and when we get the ball, we wanted always try to be quick to make a counter attack, and I think a few times we saw that, and I guess twice we were very successful with two goals after a counter attack. Also we had a few more chances.
In the second half, obviously, Barcelona had quite a lot of the ball, but it felt from the outside that Madrid were quite comfortable. You were reasonably happy with them having possession and reasonably confident that you could keep them away from harming you.
Yeah, we knew before the game that they have a really big quality in their squad when they have the ball, when they have the possession on the pitch, and this is what we knew before. We really have a big mentality in our squad, and we really wanted to be clear on the defense, try to be very strong and confident also when we are in the defense.
You personally, what was it like after the game? What did your teammates say to you, and how much are you enjoying this new spell in Spain?
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of time to be in the dressing room right now because I'm standing in front of you right now. But yeah, they congratulate me. But yeah, now I know it's a really nice feeling to win a Clásico.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, I think it was a good game. Two strong sides. And I think the Barcelona was playing well in the first half. Maybe they had to deserve to score the first goal. We didn't score. They scored the first one. And after that, it's always difficult because they are a defending team and waiting for the counter-attack. And it's always difficult. And we did not create a lot in the second half. But in some moments in the game, we had the chance. But then you need to score.
You say you didn't create very much in the second half. Why not? What did you think was missing?
For us, difficult. Because you have a Madrid in front, in defending, which all the players back close to the box. And then you need to be lucky. You need to be really good in the fast passing. And that wasn't in the second half. And even till the end, we fought for a better result, but finally it wasn't.
As you say, Madrid were very direct. They were very good on the counter-attack. In particular, they exploited the space that Vinicius was running into, so much so that you took Mingueza off at half-time. Was that because you were concerned about how often they were making chances on that side?
Yeah, but at by 1-0 down, they still playing more in that way, and we chose to bring in Coutinho in the offensive side and to put Dest back in his normal position. And I think that was okay because Vinicius was not that dangerous in the second half than he was in the first.
Thanks, Ronald. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
After today's results, this is how La Liga's table is looking. Real Sociedad still on top. They do have more games played, though, than those below them due to some of the postponements. Real Madrid perhaps the winners of the weekend given results elsewhere, and Sevilla up in the top two after a brilliant game this morning. But we will be heading back to Barcelona, where Dan Thomas is with Ali Moreno and Sid Lowe, the party pooper, who stopped Alaba celebrating with his teammates in the dressing room. But guys, Ronald Koeman, the pressure's got to be on after that, hasn't it?
Yeah, pressure's definitely got to be on at Ronald Koeman, Sid chatting to David Alaba, and as you rightly say, Kay, him saying, how are you going to celebrate? Well, I'm stuck here chatting to you. I haven't had the chance to do that. Let's talk about the future of Koeman, Sid. How much does this result affect that?
Well, I think we're in a position where, in the immediate short term, it shouldn't affect it very much. What it does is confirm the situation that we thought we were in. We know that the reason why he's still in the job is essentially because Barcelona financially couldn't afford it and couldn't find a viable alternative at this point. And so in a way, I think it doesn't change what happens in the mid to long term future. The question, I suppose, is whether this game, winning it and playing well and maybe then getting through the Champions League group, would have been enough to have kind of held things off for a little bit longer. But the bottom line is you've got a president who doesn't entirely believe in him,
yeah,
results that aren't great, and performances that aren't great. Now, we can argue all night about how much of that is Koeman's fault, but it doesn't put him in a strong position.
Managerially-wise, what did he get wrong today?
Well, I thought taking Ansu Fati off the field wasn't a great idea. Now, Ansu Fati did get a knock just before he was taken off the field, but I really think that of the players that you have out there, he is the one guy that has real change of pace for Barcelona. And so that in itself, I thought, you know what? I keep this kid out there until he cannot run anymore. They never really threatened Real Madrid. They never really turned Real Madrid around. Real Madrid was very comfortable just sitting there and making Barcelona, okay, you complete a pass here, complete a pass there, complete it over there. We're right. Still seeing wherever you want to go. And we're controlling that. And so Real Madrid, without having to play all that well, they had a control in the game because Barcelona were never a real threat. The one threat that they had was Sergiño Dest in that first half. He scores that goal, changes the game. He did not, and at that point, Real Madrid just kind of took over and did just enough on counter-attack opportunities. But taking Ansu Fati off the field, didn't quite understand.
Yeah, Ronald Koeman kind of said it, didn't he? It was just about taking chances in that first half. Sergiño Dest, obviously, with that beautiful opportunity. How's he feeling tonight?
Awful. I have to imagine, awful. And if he, whenever he goes back and takes a look at the video, he's gonna understand that Thibaut Courtois was already diving out of the way. Maybe he didn't realize how much time he had, or maybe he had too much time. However you want to slice it, however you want to frame it, here's the thing. It wasn't even close.
Right.
He doesn't even force a save. He doesn't go on target. And at that point, you just kind of go, you know what? Not sure that he was ready to take this opportunity on in this moment with all these people, moment of pressure. What do you think about the top players around the world, the elite players around the world, is that when everything is going fast around you, you're able to slow things down and just find the right pass, or in this case, the right finish. He did not, and Barcelona paid for it.
If Serginho Dest fluffed his lines, David Alaba absolutely nailed it. What a brilliant goal.
It's a fantastic finish, isn't it? And, you know, you think about a defender in that position. You think about it being his first Clásico and all the things that could go through your mind. And as he said post-game, what were you thinking of? Scoring.
Yeah.
And he hit it so, so well. And I must admit, when it unfolded live, I thought it was a better chance than I watched it again. And when you watch it back, you think he still has a huge amount to do. He strikes it brilliantly. But I thought that goal was actually indicative of the way the game was. The speed with which Real Madrid came out from the back, that meant that even a central defender is overlapping on the left-hand side. Then you get the second goal. Of course, it's Lucas Vazquez, the fullback, who scores it, getting up into the other end of the pitch. And it just felt like Barcelona weren't able to do that. And Real Madrid, when they ran, they found huge amounts of space to get into.
And it's a small detail in that first goal, but ends up being a big detail. Depay loses the ball, top of the 18-yard box. Alaba is right next to him.
Yes.
He goes on the full sprint. Depay recognizes that right away, so he's chasing Alaba, and he's with him. And then at some point, he decided to say, you know what? Yeah, I'm done chasing.
Yeah, passing it on.
I'm passing him on. But who are you passing him on? That other guy, in this case, Eric Garcia, must know that you're passing him on. You can't just say, enough, that's it, I'm done with this run. This is too long. I'm not going to go all the way back. You cannot pass a player on if you don't know who's picking him up. And if that guy is not aware that you're passing him on. Depay stops running. Eric Garcia now addresses the run of Karim Benzema. And at that point, David Alaba, who just continued his run, he's wide open down the left-hand side. And then the finish was just outstanding.
Accusations, of course, ahead of this game of apathy from the Barcelona fans, given what has happened, Messi leaving in the summer. This, of course, only, the third match that they had the opportunity to fill the Camp Nou. It was pretty much full. And the atmosphere was brilliant, I thought.
It was good, yeah. And look, there's a number of reasons why it hasn't happened until now. Obviously, one of them, of course, is the team.
Yes.
I'm not going to try and pretend otherwise, but I do think you need to look at the mechanical reasons as well. And that's to do with the post-COVID scenario, in which I think some people are nervous of going back. Season ticket holders, some hadn't renewed because they weren't sure if they were even going to be able to go to watch the games this year. You've had, of course, the impact that the pandemic has had on tourism in this city, and tourists account for a big part of those who go to Barcelona games. So there are lots of good reasons for it, but you're right. Today there was a response. Ticket sales were very, very good. The empty seats, we're told, are season ticket holders who didn't turn up. In terms of the number of tickets actually on sale, those were almost all sold.
What was striking was the decibel level of the whistles when any Real Madrid player touched the ball, certainly early on in this tie, and you're like, yes, we got a proper game back.
The crowd was into it, and what they needed was Barcelona to give them a reason to believe that this was possible. Now, in big games so far this season, you look back at Bayern Munich, not so good. Against Atletico Madrid, not so good. Here it was. Against Real Madrid, Clásico, at home. Give them a reason to believe that this is possible so that they can truly get behind you. And there it was, a chance early on. You don't take advantage of the chance. And the crowd was just kind of like, okay, that's all right. We're going to get it. Yeah. We're going to get it. The support was there. You think about sometimes fans here in Barcelona, a little bit of cynicism. Are they supporting Ronald Koeman or not? Is Luke de Jong really the answer? All these questions that have come out throughout the course of the season. But today they were behind this team and hoping that they would give him a reason to really get behind the team.
Having said all that, Luke de Jong is not the answer.
No, he's not.
I think he's not. That once again.
They whistle him when he came out on the field as well.
Sid, overall, Kay mentioned it. Hey, what a great weekend for Real Madrid. Not only do you take 3 points and your bitter rivals in the first Clásico of the season, you see Atleti and Real Sociedad share the spoils of that draw. We'll talk about the game a little bit later on. But just the significance of this weekend regards to title race, Real Madrid favourites.
I think Real Madrid probably are favourites because we're seeing a team that you look at and you think they can still get better. So this is a team that's at the top but can still get better. A team that is winning games but without really convincing us, and you feel like Yeah, there will be times when they will go on a run at some point. Now, whether that's sustainable, who knows? I guess the one thing that went against them this weekend was Sevilla not just winning, but Sevilla winning and scoring lots of goals,
right,
which we really haven't seen from them so far this season.
We talk about Real Madrid have still yet to get going. We talked about them winning in second gear. I suppose the question is, can they find that extra gear? Are we giving them too much a benefit of the doubt in that they've played a lot this season and we've still yet to see them consistently put in brilliant performances?
And that's the key, consistently. Because in moments, they've looked good. In moments, Luka Modric today was just running the game in the second half and getting in little combinations and getting the ball from one side, finding the other, going and get the ball back again, a little combination here, and then the ball over the top to Karim Benzema. Benzema has a chance on the volley. So in moments you see that.
Yes.
But that's a problem for Real Madrid, that outside of Karim Benzema and Vinicius Jr. early on the season, who have been the most consistent players, the rest of the group, the back line and through the midfield, inconsistent. If indeed they find that consistency, and it's a big if, and I'm not sure that this team actually has it in them to find that consistency, but if they do, then you know full well, you saw the experience today at times with Cruz, Casemiro, Modric, how they ran that midfield when they needed to do it. Not all the time, but when they needed to do it. If they're able to do that, then of course, yes, Real Madrid should be the favorites. But it's a big question in terms of the consistency that they're still yet to answer.
Well, there's another way of looking at it as well, which is looking at the way the other teams are playing, whether it might be that we have a season in which they don't necessarily need that consistency because no one else finds it either, that this is enough. And I must admit, and I was thinking this three or four match days ago, and I slightly changed my mind when they were then defeated, and you sort of think, well, maybe it's not going to quite work after all. But I look at Modric and Benzema and even Kroos and possibly even now Vinicius, and I think there are four players there that no one else in the league has got a player as good as those four.
Mm. Right.
I mean, that might be stretching it, saying all four of them. Yeah. But certainly, Modric and Benzema, no one has a player of the technical quality.
Barcelona fans are shouting Ansu Fati at you right now.
He's a fantastically exciting player, but he's also very young. And so I would put him in that next bracket. But I'm not sure I'd put him in the very top bracket with Modric and Benzema.
They're shouting Pedri as well. I'm being told. I can see Twitter now.
You can see them now.
Yeah, I can see Twitter.
You've not got people just slightly off camera shouting names at you. Not mouthing to you. And those are good players. But honestly, look, I think Pedri's a wonderful footballer. I've really enjoyed watching his emergence over the last year. But I'm not sure we're yet ready, are we, to say that Pedri's at the level of Modric?
Okay, well, let's talk about the one molecule, maybe just the one little slice of optimism that Barcelona fans can take away from today. And that's Kun Agüero scoring his first goal in a Barca shirt. Very well taken.
Yeah. Scoring a goal and looking very much alive in the game. Sharp on the ball, sharp movement off the ball, nice quick little runs, and then finding spaces where he needs to be to score goals. It's a nice run from Sergiño Dest on the right-hand side, finds the service, and then Kun Agüero, where we've seen him time and time and time again over the years, and providing that final touch. Now, what we have said of Barcelona many a times is they don't quite have the final touch. And take Messi out of the equation, and you really don't have the final touch. So having Kun Agüero at his best, whatever is left of Kun Agüero, yes, of course, it's positive news for Barcelona. But there's so many other things that they're going to have to address. They're going to have to get better performances from Frankie de Jong, for
example. I was trying to get positive, a little bit of positive.
Okay. Well, they're going to have to get better performance from Frankie de Jong, right? They're going to have to get consistency in the back line. They're going to have to try to figure out, okay, Sergiño Dest, is he the right back? Then put him at right back. Stop trying to figure it out with Mingueza, because obviously that didn't work today. There are reasons to be optimistic because of Ansu Fati, because of Agüero scoring goals, because at some point Pedri is going to come back into the picture, because Gavi is going to mature. All those things are fine.
Right.
Overall, the picture for Barcelona is not that great.
I think that's right. And Koeman was saying this earlier in the season. And of course, today, I think, was another one of those expressions of that phrase from Piqué after the Bayern Munich game. El lo que hay. It is what it is. Now, obviously, what Barcelona have done over the last two or three weeks is pull back slightly from this. And one of the reasons they've pulled back from it is because you have to.
Yeah.
Because you can't have your manager saying, the team's not very good, what do you expect? We can't compete. So you have to pull back from that and send another message. But there was a reason that Koeman was saying that before, and it wasn't purely self-interest, although there was an element of self-interest. Because, of course, if you're a manager and you're not getting results, one way out of this is to say, look at what I've got.
Sure.
But I think there was also a kernel of truth in that, and I think he was telling the truth. And, of course, now we're seeing elements of that again in these bigger games. They just don't quite have it. Now, I still think get everyone fit and get a little bit of a run going, and then maybe you've got a good side.
All right, boys, thank you very much. Stay where you are. But for now, let's hand it back, shall we, to Kay in the studio.
Thanks, Dan. Yes, let's look at what else happened today in La Liga. The game that they mentioned between Atleti and Real Sociedad, it was the league title holders taking on the current leaders in La Liga. And we'll pick up the action in the seventh minute. It was a great start for Real Sociedad. Alexander Isak found Alexander Sorloth. This happened.
Well, this was a nice move. It was four passes, basically, first time. And Sorloth ends up putting it home. You've got to say that Oblak just doesn't make a decision here and in the end does nothing. And so it's a simple finish.
Then Alexander Isak with a free kick, Shaka.
Yeah, listen, as a fully paid member of the Goalkeepers Union, I declare this a wonderfully struck free kick by Isak.
Yeah, right.
It's hard to explain how that beats a goalkeeper of Oblak's quality.
But it did. At 60th minute, things turn around and go back in Atleti's favour. Luis Suarez with a header here to make it 2-1.
Well, that's a nice little ball floated in on João Félix. And no surprise. Who's on the end of it? Suarez. What a shock.
And then we would see in the 74th minute, Mikel Merino catching Luis Suarez with his studs. The referee would check VAR and award a penalty.
Yeah, he doesn't give it first time of asking. The reason being that Luis Suarez, I think, misses the kick, but Merino, no question, catches him down the back of the calf. That's a penalty. Luis Suarez from 12 yards makes absolutely no mistake.
Here a look at the stats after this one. So Atleti coming back in the second half. They've not quite been as strong so far this season at their Wanda Metropolitano. Not the fortress it was last season, but Real Sociedad definitely making a name for themselves in the current campaign so far and are sitting top of the table. Some uncharacteristic moments from Atleti, you'd have to say here, especially we're talking about Oblak, who's usually so sturdy, Shaka, and even just defensively from what we saw from Atleti today, it wasn't the usual, was it?
Listen, I'm no doctor, but I'll say I think Oblak wasn't moving well. And I think you saw that for the first goal in particular, how he went down afterwards. I don't feel that there was an awful lot of contact, but that, to me, maybe said there's something going on that he came brought into this game. And then he just looked slower than you associate with Oblak in getting across for that Isak free kick. And as much as we can criticise Atletico Madrid for how easily Real Sociedad got their goals, particularly that first goal, the second coming from a set piece. But the first goal, I thought Sociedad were very good in their one-touch passing. Isak, it really was that good from them. And though Toblak gets free down the middle, it's a perfectly weighted perfectly weighted ball down the middle and makes good work of the finish. This is the one for me, again, I question Oblak. Is unsighted by the wall, but I'd expect him to save that. And then Atleti, we saw them do this against Liverpool and almost rewarded for that. We won't relive that moment. But they never gave up. And I thought, strangely, Atletico Madrid, again, second time of asking, started playing their best football when they found themselves behind. You do not want to give an opponent that kind of a head start. And Atleti didn't learn against Liverpool, come up against good opposition in Sociedad. And though they get the point, I just feel that Atleti don't turn it on until they find themselves trailing.
Would you agree with that, Stevie?
Yeah, I think for Simeone, the worry is giving goals away, too many goals away. It's not something we associate with them. You know, with them we associate rugged, strong, strength, giving little away. That's what they've built their reputation on. But that has disappeared. And they're struggling to get a partnership at centre-back. You know, today it's Felipe and Hermosa. How Hermosa plays after a horrendous mistake against Liverpool is beyond me. They got injuries, Savic, Hernandez. They can't get it right at centre-back. And that's, listen, every real team is built on a base. They don't have that right now.
Meanwhile, Dan, it seems that Real Sociedad are getting lots of things right. In fact, I know that Sid Lowe himself has been waxing lyrical about them in one of his articles this week.
Oh, well done, Kay. You were the one person I think that read his article this week about Real Sociedad. They'd be disappointed, Sid. You're 2-0 up.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely they will, because it was an opportunity. And I think it was an opportunity not just to beat Atletico Madrid, last year's champions, not just to beat a team that's competing with you for La Liga, but I think also an opportunity to prove to yourselves that you really can compete for this league. Because you look at Real Sociedad's performances this year, and their results obviously have been very, very good. But you run through the teams they're against. They drew with Sevilla. They were beaten by Barcelona. The others are teams that, and I know it never works like this, but the others are teams that they would probably expect to beat, that
sure,
they probably should be. And as we were talking about earlier on today, about this idea that there haven't always been the performances that Real Sociedad would sometimes put in. And I think in the first half today, they did. And then to have lost it. Now look, they know who they're up against. They know it's a very good side. They know it's the current champions. But yes, there will be huge disappointment.
I cannot believe that Dan Thomas is giving you a hard time about your articles. What did you say that you strive to do when you write an article?
Well, the thing is, you see, you want them to stand the test of time.
Yes!
And yes, this article was 5 days ago now. So no, 6 days ago. So it clearly doesn't do that.
It's gone. It's gone off into the ether.
The thing is, it didn't stand the test of time with you, what, about an hour?
that's stretching a little bit. Ali, if you're Atleti, are you happy that you get a point, or are you disappointed that yet again you find yourself coming from behind from 2-0?
You're disappointed. You have to be. Now, of course, yes, there's a good fight. Oh, okay, Atletico Madrid has fight in them. Oh, we didn't know that. Yes, of course we did. This is part of what they do. But why do you have to make it so very difficult all the time? Why do you have to go a goal down, two goals down, in order to then show some urgency, to make some substitution, to make some changes, to see some players taking a responsibility in the attacking half and create some chances? Now, the talent is there for Atletico Madrid, but at some point you have to say, okay, all right, people, I know we're talented.
Right.
But how about we defend better than what we have? This should be basic for Atletico Madrid. But maybe they're taking it for granted. The first goal is just shameful defending. It's optional defending. It's a free run by Sorloth right down the middle of the field. It's like, hey, the big guy who's running right down the middle, who's particularly not all that quick, and he's getting away from everybody, and he scores, essentially walks in and scores a goal. That is not Atletico Madrid. That's not the way they play. If you're Simeone and Atletico Madrid, you're disappointed that this is the way that things are going, but of course you are proud of the reaction, I suppose. But you expect more from Atletico Madrid.
Is it too easy to just say, oh, old school Atleti wouldn't have done that?
It is easy, but I don't think it's necessarily wrong. And I think that's important. And let me take you back to the game against Getafe. They were 1-0 down against Getafe. They came back and they won 2-1. And Luis Suarez scored the winner quite late on. And after that game, Mario Hermoso said, look, we're really pleased that we have the players that we can turn games around. But at some point, we won't do this. We won't succeed. And what happened? The very next week, they played Alaves. They're 1-0 down again at halftime. Again, they're trailing. And they didn't find a way back in. You're not always going to succeed. Now, that brings you to that other point. As you say, some of the things that were the hallmarks of this team are not quite there now. Today, it was a different formation because, of course, he was trying to fit the front three in. So that meant losing one of the defenders. So it was a four rather than a five. But there are some basic things that are not just about structure that are going wrong. Basic individual errors, poor performances from individual players. I think the absence of Savic is really important for them as well. But they're not doing some of the simple things.
Here we go. It's late, but focus.
Okay.
Real Madrid, yep. Barcelona, Atleti, Real Sociedad, Sevilla. Give me the order in which those five teams finish.
Oh, goodness me. And he took out Osasuna, by the way.
He did take out.
Well, you know, my anti-Pamplona ways.
Real Madrid, followed by Atletico, followed by Sevilla, followed by Real Sociedad, followed by Barcelona.
Ooh, wow. Barcelona miss
the
out on Champions
sure
League
about
football.
There is Real Sociedad and Barcelona. But right. I'm not saying I'm sure about the others because anything can happen. But those three.
You're saying that Barcelona aren't going to make Champions League. That's what you're saying. Sure.
I'm saying it's perfectly plausible that they don't.
Yeah. Okay.
Ali, do you have the similar order?
No, I do not. Real Madrid.
Ask the man who knows, folks.
No. Atletico Madrid.
Right.
Barcelona.
Okay.
Sevilla. All these other teams, as we saw today from Real Sociedad,
right,
they will fade when it comes time to really get results.
I'm less convinced. I believe that with Real Sociedad, I do. Yeah. That's where I have the doubt. I'm less convinced about Sevilla. I think Sevilla do have enough depth and they do have enough ability to grind out results that they can finish ahead of Barcelona. But a lot depends on Barcelona rather than on the other teams, to be honest.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. We could go out and maybe have a beer and tapas or go home and read Sidlow's archives.
Okay. Let's do that.
What choice? Do you
beer, shall we?
We'll make. Okay, back to you in the studio.
Well, I think we all know what you will be doing there, Dan, and it's not reading Sid Lowe's archive. Great work from all you guys this weekend. Thanks so much for joining us from Barcelona.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike?
here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Old Trafford setting the scene for Manchester United taking on Liverpool. Manchester United suffering one of their worst defeats in recent memory. An absolute obliteration.
Memory, history.
History.
100 years ago.
5 goals for Liverpool, no goals for Manchester United. Liverpool second in the table, just a point behind Chelsea as it stands. Manchester City a point back of Liverpool. And West Ham climbing up into the top four after getting a win over Spurs. So, Stevie, what did you make of this overall? What can you take away from this? How can Liverpool beat Manchester United by such a big scoreline at Old Trafford?
Did it really happen? I've been asking myself all day, did this really happen? And while I was watching the game, I'm asking myself, is this really happening? Because it was so easy. And I'm actually glad that Klopp came out after the game and kept his head. I think he said an important thing. Before Liverpool scored, Bruno Fernandes had a great chance to put United ahead. That could have changed the game. But as soon as Liverpool scored, it was almost down tools by Manchester United. We've criticised them about not being a team. And we saw today against a real team the difference. And they couldn't get close. They couldn't make any decisions. Every decision they made was a bad one. And Liverpool, who I thought actually still had another gear, just played with them, you know. But again, it's one thing to make chances and it's another thing to take them. And Liverpool right now have probably got the guy on fire in world football in Mo Salah, because a hat-trick at Old Trafford, I mean, unless you know what you're doing, that doesn't happen. So, listen, at the end of it, it's an easy win for Liverpool. None of us saw it coming, but I think it says more about how bad Manchester United are than how good Liverpool are, because what we saw from Liverpool is just what Liverpool do.
Yeah, well, we can now welcome in Don Hutchison and Frank Leboeuf, who are also watching this game. In the predictions beforehand, Frank, you said that this was going to be 0-0, so were you surprised to see such a big scoreline in Liverpool's favour?
Well, I was half right, you know. It was 0 for Manchester United. I was wrong for the second part. But I want to say something. At the beginning of the season, I said Mo Salah would be the top scorer. And I'm not that far to be right, you know. We'll see very soon. But now it's... It's a crazy performance, because it's not a difficult task that Liverpool had. And I want to back up Stevie on when he's just said before. It was an easy performance for Liverpool. That's the worst for Manchester United, when you have to say that. I didn't find that Liverpool had to force themselves to get a result, or have been absolutely fantastic to win 5-0. I think they just did what they had to do. They were good, but I think Manchester United was very poor. And now we have to listen to Craig Burley. I think we cannot question him anymore. We have to really listen to what he has to say about the tactic of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the way he prepares this player, how he handled a game. I think he was nowhere near it today, and that's very appalling.
Talking about that, there's so many words to describe what we saw from Manchester United today, Don. And we've seen and we've talked about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer being able to pull it out when he needs to the most, but not today.
Not today, nor last week against Leicester, because Leicester in the second half, Kay, they absolutely dismantled Man United. You know, it was 4-2 going on 7. And I looked at my notes after the game today, after the 5-0, and I looked at my notes that I'd written down in the Leicester game, and they got outworked. They got outclassed, they got outbossed in the game. Man United's pressing is non-existent. They are down at the bottom in terms of the running stats for everyone in the Premier League. They are the Harlem Globetrotters of the Premier League. When they turn it on and when the individuals turn it on, they can win games. But when you come up against a team and a proper team, because their fixture list since the start of the season in the Premier League has actually been quite kind. And as soon as they come up against a proper team in Leicester, who beat them 4-2, and in the superior team in Liverpool, Liverpool beat them 5. But I agree with Stevie, it was 5 going on 6 or 7. But easy street, they didn't have to work for anything. And I think one player that might not get too much credit out of the performance today, because Salah and Jordan Henderson, there'll be lots of them that gets headlines. I thought Firmino tore Harry Maguire to shreds today. I thought the England captain had no idea on how to mark Firmino when he was dropping in the pockets. And Konate coming in was a surprise before the game. And he nailed Ronaldo in a tackle at 50-50, 8 minutes in. And that set the tone. And United just faded out of the game.
Yeah, brilliant performance from Liverpool, but a horrible performance from Manchester United. Afterwards, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had this to say: "It's not easy to say something apart from it is the darkest day I have had leading these players. The responsibility is mine. That's it. The coaching staff are very, very good. Brilliant. I choose the way we approach the game. We were not clinical enough and we gave too many spaces. And when you give good players space, they score. But I have come too far. We have come too far as a group and we are too close to give up now." Stevie, too close to what to give up now?
I don't know.
It's a strange thing that you've mentioned there, isn't it?
I've no idea. I don't know. I listened to him talking about coaching. And this is a team that without the ball doesn't know what to do. That goes back to the manager. 100%. It goes back to the manager. And the other thing I just wanted to mention that stuck out, when I saw the team sheet, I thought, Paul Pogba, 100%, will be leaving Manchester United at the end of the season. Because if you've got a player like Pogba in your team and in your squad, and you don't play him in arguably the biggest game of the season for Manchester United, then that tells you one thing. And he will absolutely be gone. But as far as Ollie, everybody outside of Old Trafford is saying the same thing. Ollie, when it comes to the big game, gets it all wrong. And he got it all wrong again today. And we're all going to say somebody else should be in charge. But inside Old Trafford, it seems like he's still doing a decent job.
And maybe we'll still get another chance. You mentioned Paul Pogba. He ended up getting sent off with this one. Do you think, Frank, you could really see the frustrations boiling over, particularly with Cristiano Ronaldo in this game?
Yes, of course, you know, when you're in the middle of the park and you see what's going on to your teammates and you play forward and you see that defensively you're nowhere near it, you get frustrated. And I saw old pictures of Ronaldo every time he conceded the goal, and I saw that. And I disagree with Steve. I think it's a clear frustration kick, and you cannot kick that. You cannot do that. It's an example that you have to be. I know the frustration, and as it happened to me, I kicked Harry Kewell once, and I got 4 games and the red card. And I know the analysis of the other tackle from Bruno Fernandes. TV said, "Well, he's a forward. He's not a defender. He doesn't know how to tackle. That's fine by me." No, that's not fine. He could have broken an ankle. So I just say that. If you don't know how to tackle, you don't tackle. And if you are frustrated and you kick somebody, you should be kicked off. Kicked out. So it doesn't matter if you kick the ball. It's clearly an offense to the player, in that matter, Jones, being on the floor. So, okay, you're frustrated, but you shouldn't do that. I'm sure Luke Shaw would have done that. It would have been red carded. But because it's Ronaldo, because maybe he's a forward, because he doesn't do that quite often, well, you just get a yellow card. So, I disagree with that.
So they should have finished with 7 players then?
Well, actually, it brings up a great point, though, because we saw senior players in this Manchester United side very frustrated. And Don, you wonder what that says for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I know you said he'd still be in charge in January. Do you still think that after today's showing?
I mean, do I think he should be replaced? I think yes, 100%. I think when you've got the Galactico side, it screams towards someone like Zidane taking over, or Antonio Conte, who would do a better job. From what I'm hearing, I mean, listen, there's always a number that gets a manager sacked. And Daniel Farke losing 7 yesterday is a bad number. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer losing 5 against Liverpool at home to Old Trafford is a bad number. And that number can get you the sack. I think probably what's happening now at Old Trafford in the bowels of the stadium, I think they're probably making calls to someone like Zidane or Conte and saying, brace yourself, get yourself ready. We normally see changes happen in and around an international break, which is coming up in a couple of weeks' time. I don't know how he survives it, because I said that off the back of, well, I think it was just before the Leicester game, I didn't see Man United conceding 9 goals in 2 Premier League games and getting absolutely torn apart. And Ollie, with that statement in that press conference, is a manager that I think is holding on to his job.
Well, let's move on to another Premier League game that we saw, West Ham taking on Spurs. It was a 1-0 win for West Ham. Mikel Antonio continuing his fine form to score his 6th Premier League goal of the season. Hammers moving up to 4th in the table. It was David Moyes' best start to a season since 04-05 with Everton. Looking good, aren't they, Frank?
Yeah, they're looking good, even if I'm not sure they deserve to win today. I think Tottenham was slightly better, but I think my analysis about that game is fooled, and was fooled by the 2 games that I saw yesterday with Chelsea and City playing in another level. And I think with Liverpool, those 3 clubs, they made a statement that they are the 3 best clubs and they are the others. And what I saw today from West Ham or Tottenham is telling me that they don't belong to the same level, but also they shouldn't be close, because I see that West Ham is 4th in the league. They're not nowhere near the other 3. That was a poor performance from West Ham. I didn't see them, you know, marching on Tottenham, you know, doing something special. They reacted to that. They had a lucky goal. I think Antonio didn't know that the ball was coming on. Really, it was. I didn't enjoy the game, and I wasn't pleased with the performance. They won, 3 points is good, but it's not enough for me.
At 3 points, a clean sheet, and that win puts them into the top 4. Are you a bit more impressed with them, Stevie?
Yeah. Listen, they're no Liverpool or City or Chelsea, as Frank said, but they stopped Tottenham getting a shot at goal in the second half. And always looked a threat going forward. If there was one of these 2 teams that looked a threat going forward, it was West Ham. I mean, Mikel Antonio, he's not the most pleasing thing to your eye. You know, for style points, he don't get many. But I'll tell you what, for endeavour, for work rate, for goals, for leading his team, for giving defenders headaches, he's fantastic to have in your team. They've just got a good balance. They've got big, strong defenders, they've got a solid midfield, Declan Rice, no question, will not be West Ham for too much longer. And you've got Mikel Antonio, who right now can't do an awful lot wrong and is an absolute handful. So, listen, in my opinion, West Ham absolutely were better than Tottenham.
Don, you've got to be happy to see West Ham doing well today.
I think Frank's being incredibly harsh. And the job that David Moyes has done, it's been phenomenal. You know, since I was at West Ham, the culture's completely changed. If you're going to beat West Ham nowadays...
Don, sorry, Don, I'm just cutting you off. You know, I'm not saying that the coach doesn't do a great job. I'm just talking about that game. Overall, the season of West Ham is absolutely fantastic, and I agree with you. Yeah. I'm just saying that I didn't enjoy that game in particular. That's it. Yeah. I have nothing against the Spurs. Go on, sorry.
No, I think that's fair. No, I think that's a fair point. I think it wasn't the most... You know, it wasn't a game for the purists, shall we say. It wasn't a rip-roaring performance in a London derby. But, I stand by the job that David Moyes has done over the tenure that he's been there. And, you know, when I was at West Ham, you were losing games and you try and move on to the next game. There's a little bit of a culture where you think, well, we're a little bit off the cuff. We'll see where we can get to. I think with David Moyes, you're looking at a team now where if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to earn it. You know, West Ham these days, they carry no passengers whatsoever. Since David Moyes has gone in there, he's gone, right, Philippe Anderson, no good for me, get him gone. Sebastian Haller doesn't put a shift in, no good for me, get him gone. It's more the windows, what I think David Moyes has done well at, getting players out the door and more so bringing players in because they're a good side these days.
Oh, well, there's a wealth of Premier League talk over on our ESPN FC YouTube page, and that includes some bonus content too. Subscribe to make sure that you can keep up to date with it all. Do that over on YouTube.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Marseille PSG, no goals in this game. Lionel Messi was on the pitch, as was Neymar, Mbappe and Di Maria. Ashraf Hakimi wasn't on it for too long. He got a straight red for a foul on Cengiz Under. Frank had his eye on this game. Frank, what can you tell us about it?
First, that was a very entertaining game. Absolutely fantastic atmosphere. And two teams wanted to win. So that was quite offensive. There were two goals disallowed by VAR, fairly disallowed by VAR. But that was a great game to watch. The two teams, as I said, tried to go forward and to find a way to score a goal. And after, which is weird, after the red card of Hakimi, Marseille didn't try to finish Paris Saint-Germain. I think they were happy with the 1 point. That was the only thing that I can say that I was disappointed about. But overall, that was a decent performance. I even saw Messi, when they were 10 against 11 defending, working hard for the team. That was very encouraging for the spirit of the team. But disappointed by the end of the game of Marseille. Neymar wasn't ready. I think he shouldn't have played. I think he played only 50% of his real qualities. But good performance overall. Clean sheet for both teams. And a good entertainment.
No doubts about Ashraf Hakimi's red card either, right?
No, of course not. He pushed under, was going to the goal. It was just outside the 16-yard box. That was fair enough. It was just a free kick. But you can see under being in the full pace and pushed down, you know, from Hakimi. And it's a straight red card because he could have gone to score. That's only fair. But nothing happened with a Payet free kick after that.
So far, no goal for Messi in Ligue 1. There's no concerns there, is it? Especially the fact we've seen him scoring in the Champions League.
No, everything's okay. His commitment was very good today. He was working hard. He has some chances today. He had a header, hit the post. Nothing much to say, you know. It's the first time that he was living a real Clásico. I'm just teasing. But the atmosphere was absolutely fantastic. But that was the first time that he played a Clásico, Marseille against Paris. And it was good. He did the job. He worked. He was a little bit too much on the side. Thierry Henry was commentating for the French channel. He said, I don't understand why he's so much on the right side. And it's true that when he came in the middle, he was more effective, more useful. And he's getting there. No doubt that he's going to be serving the club very well. And he's already doing that. He has to finish his action and score goals.
So that was a massive game in France. We've seen a massive game in England, massive games in Spain too. And the same for Serie A, where we saw the Derby d'Italia and Roma taking on Napoli. Napoli still top of the table, although they did drop their first points of the season. Behind them, it's Milan, Inter and Roma. We now welcome in Jurgen Klinsmann. Don Hutchison is still with us. So we will start with you, Jurgen. Between the game of Inter and Juve, it was looking good to start for Inter with Edin Dzeko once again on the score sheet.
Yeah, it was a perfect start for Inter and a very exciting kind of occasion, because the San Siro finally was filled with about 60,000 people. Not all the way. I think they are now allowed two-thirds of the capacity. It was a great start for Inter. I mean, Cananoglu hit the post, almost the upper 90, and Dzeko put in the rebound. And it couldn't have been a better start for Inter. But after that, for whatever reason, they slowed down. And the game just went on and on. And Juventus never really showed the urgency until then, about minute 65. They put in Federico Chiesa and Dybala to give it more urgency and to give it more pressure. And they came then to an equalizer with a very kind of a controversial penalty. Probably after watching it over and over again on VAR, it was a penalty. You can give it a very soft penalty. But overall, the game was disappointing because you thought, well, with Inter getting into a lead so early into the game, Juventus will show more dynamics, Juventus will show more initiative. But that wasn't the case. It was kind of a bit of a boring game and disappointing in a certain way.
But I don't think Max Allegri will mind that it was a bit of a boring game, will he? Things suddenly going right for Juventus, and it seems that the Allegri effect is taking hold again.
Yeah, I think, you know, you could see, I mean, the way Juventus started the game, okay, was showing already signs that, okay, first of all, we're going to defend. You know, we will not risk anything. We'll see how the game is going, and then we'll correct it towards the end of the game. But if you go down a goal after 15 minutes, you got to have to react. I mean, you got to do something, you know, and it took him until minute 65 to put in Chiesa, who is, in my opinion, the best Juventus player at the moment over the last half a year is Federico Chiesa. I mean, he's a difference maker. Dybala, after his break, came back on, obviously then scored with the penalty. But you expect more. I mean, you expect more from a Juventus side. Inter also in the second half kind of started to just defend that 1-0. They thought, okay, you know what, if we stay solid, you know, they kind of played their usual 3-5-2. So the outside people came back, so it turned into a 5-3-2 or almost a 5-4-1. So let's just kind of keep the result. And then that's so typical Juventus. Then they kind of get their goal. They get their goal somehow, whatever reason. I mean, if it's the referee, if it's a penalty, if it's a free kick, somehow they manage it to get then a result out of that. And I think in a certain way, actually, they deserve it because Inter didn't do enough for deserving all 3 points.
Yeah, I'm sure they won't be too upset with getting a point from San Siro. Meanwhile, Don, you were on the call for the other game between Roma and Napoli. There were no goals here. There was drama, though, with both coaches getting sent off. We'll talk about that in a moment. Yeah. But were Roma too conservative at home in this game?
Do you know what, Kay? It was a hilarious game to commentate on because the game throughout the 90 minutes was brewing. And I don't know if you've seen Jose's comments midweek when Roma lost 6-1. And he threw his team right under the bus yet again. He said, my first 13 players are brilliant. The rest of them, hopeless. So he's absolutely gone to town on his Roma squad. He's only been there, eight, nine games in. And he's spent over £100 million or euros. So he's spent more than anyone else in Serie A. And then the game kicks off. And Zaniolo was easily their best player early on. But he's turned them overnight since Thursday into a team that was diving everywhere. They were kicking Napoli off the pitch. Ibanez was excellent alongside Mancini. The two centre-backs were brilliant. They offered very little going forward. And then, as you said, at about the hour mark, just shy of that, Jose picks up a yellow card. Then he gets sent off. And then Spalletti gets sent off at the end of the game as well. So the game was brewing, but I thought something was going to happen on the pitch, but all the drama was actually off the pitch.
Yeah, it seems to be the case, although it's a bit of a disappointment, isn't it, Jürgen? Roma and Napoli, you'd have hoped that there would have been goals in a game like this.
Yeah, but I totally agree with Don. It was highly entertaining, actually, this game.
It was.
Because, it was highly entertaining, not only because the coaches got sent off and the usual drama in the Italian way. It was, from a tactical point of view, a very, very interesting game. I think they were eliminating themselves in midfield. I think Napoli has a new difference maker this season with Anguissa. This kid, you know, just came in now into this new side, And he gives Napoli a kind of a balance that you haven't seen before. And I think that's one of the reasons actually Napoli is on top of the table, because they can figure out their midfield. I think Fabian Ruiz played a brilliant game, especially second half. Osimhen is now kind of maturing into a goal scorer. He hit twice, first the post, then the crossbar. Even if Abraham in the first half had a 100% chance, he had a score with that. Overall, the result is fine. 0-0 is the tie is fine. But you can see on both sides a lot of quality and a lot of excitement, especially with some young players.
So, Jürgen, could this be the year for Napoli?
Well, if they build that consistency, if they build that belief, if they're not getting too emotional, because Napoli is a very emotional place. I mean, the people die for their team. I mean, they live it. And you're not getting away with anything. You know, if you have a bad game and you want to go the next day to the baker or the butcher, then think about it twice if you want to do that. So if they can keep their emotions a little bit under control, if they just keep on working, being very focused on what they're doing well, if Osimhen turns into that new kind of a number nine that they badly needed, he was not there yet last year. It's just maturing, but he looks really sharp, really good. A good balance now in midfield. Their back line looks decent. Yes, they definitely have a chance.
Don, would you agree with that?
I would. When you look at what Napoli have got at the back, Kay, I mean, they've got Koulibaly, who's an absolute rock at the back, and they don't concede any goals. Romani plays alongside him, who's an excellent defender. Mara Rui at left back is very solid. Di Lorenzo, Ospina at the back. They've only conceded 3 this season. So when you look, they're not quite as exciting as they were at the start of the season when they were beating the likes of Sam 4-0 and they were banging in goals. The last 2 or 3 weeks, I thought they looked a little bit tired against Fiorentina. They beat them 2-1. Torino last week was a massive struggle, but Osimhen scored in the 80th minute and they won 1-0. I agree with Jürgen. When I watch Victor Osimhen play at only 22, he cost €70 million. Honestly, Kay, watch him, because the way he's going at the minute, in a couple of years' time, you can double that because he's going to be an absolute superstar. So at the back, going into midfield, and Anguissa was brilliant today. You know, they've got so much going for them. The only worry for Napoli is if Osimhen gets injured, have they got a direct replacement for him that's going to get his numbers? Because I think he's got, 9 and 10 since the start of the season. So his form has been terrific, but it's a back line. They're just hard to beat. You can't score against them.
Yeah, interesting times in Serie A and a very intriguing title race. Jürgen, thanks so much for joining us. If you'd like more of Don, stay tuned for Extra Time. And if you like Extra Time, then you don't need to miss it ever by subscribing to YouTube. Every day you'll be able to see the latest and have your questions answered. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that will do it for the latest edition of FC. What a day it's been in the football
world. Was
it really
5-0?
It was really 5-0.
Are you sure?
It was really 5-0.
You should
have a shepherd's pie and a beer to celebrate tonight, Stevie. Stick around with us. We've got Extra Time coming up next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Stevie thinks he's dreaming after today's results at Old Trafford. So we've got Stevie Nicol here with us. We've got Frank Leboeuf and Don Hutchison joining us too. And you can imagine what a lot of the questions are about today. So let's get started, no will we? Stevie, will Manchester United finish in the top four?
If they make a change now, yes. If they don't, no.
All right. If they make a change now, yes. If they don't, no. Frank, would you agree with that sentiment?
I totally agree with Stevie. They really have to move on something else because otherwise they're going to go through a disaster.
This is Don's face right now. Right, Don.
Well, I mean, 3 weeks ago, we all had them being in a title race. Now they're not even in the top four. They've got Tottenham next and then Man City. Ouch.
What percentage chance then, Don?
I'd still give them a... I'd give them a 70-30 chance, Kay.
Oh, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Nah. I know, but are we not being emotional because they got battered today, though?
Well, they've only got three wins in the last nine. They've only got three wins in the last nine.
We were politically correct.
Frank, you were politically correct. You're just being nice then. You don't need to be nice. It's extra time.
Yeah, No. We were politically correct when we were talking about Manchester United. But where we were talking off, you know, we all agreed, and people have to know the truth, that nobody believed that Manchester United could cope with Liverpool, Manchester City, or maybe Chelsea. You know, because they signed fantastic players, everybody thought, and we all talk about Ronaldo and Varane, they thought that something different will happen. But they still have the same problem. They don't have a project. Tactically, comparing to the others, there is no project. When they don't have the ball, and Stevie mentioned that, or even when they have the ball, they just count on the talent of the players, not on the tactic.
Who do the guys think is going to finish fourth then? Who's better than Man United?
Well, you saw Leicester last week. And Leicester haven't had the best of starts. Yeah. They're beginning to get into a bit of a stride. And they annihilated them last week. And look at the table.
And I can't believe Don's going, who's going to finish fourth? And West Ham are there and he's not even backing them.
You got West Ham. I mean,
I tried to back them, but I think Frank was right. You know, we're not quite there yet. We're just off. I still think Man U, when you look at that little group of teams and you go Tottenham, Arsenal, West Ham, Leicester, Everton, I still think Man U are the best of that bunch, just.
Don's just still sore from that prediction a couple of years ago when he said West Ham would be top four. He's learned from his mistakes and he's being careful and conservative with what he's saying.
I've been so close.
Don, as you know, never say anything in this show because they always throw it at you.
We remember everything.
I know how you feel.
Like an elephant. All right, Frank, how much does Ronaldo regret not going to City now?
Oh.
Ha, 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 ha. I think he has no regrets whatsoever. You know, he's a kid of Manchester United, and I think deeply he didn't want to go to City. I don't know. If he thought that he could win the Champions League because that was his goal, he said, I want to win the Champions League again. If he thought he was ready to win the Champions League signing for Manchester United, I think he had bad backups from some people, you know, who tried to tell him that was a good idea. Clearly, Manchester United is not ready to win the Champions League.
Detective Don has some inside info here, though. Is that right, Don?
Do I?
I don't know about why this did or didn't materialise, maybe.
Well, I mean, I was hearing that I think Mendes was on a Zoom call, I think, with Guardiola and the chief executive talking about, I think, Edison, Jesus, and I think Fernandinho's new contracts. And then he dropped it in right at the end, by the way, do you want Ronaldo? And Pep was a little bit shocked and thought, OK, let's try and get that done. Then City went a bit cold. And then what I'm hearing is Sir Alex rang the Glazers and said, you better get Ronaldo signed, because if you allow him to go to Man City, you guys might be finished in Manchester.
What a gossip. What a gossip.
Proper gossip, innit? I know.
Just spilling the tea all good, over good ESPN gossip. FC.
Good gossip, it's true. Me as well.
All right. Stevie, how do you rate Ibrahim Konate's performance today?
He's a little raw still. You know, if somebody could sit Van Dijk and him down together and Van Dijk would tell him how you do things, it would be perfect. Because there was a scenario where Rashford had just walked past Alexander-Arnold and created an opportunity for Ronaldo, I think it was. And then 2 minutes later, Rashford took on Van Dijk in the box. And Van Dijk just stood there. And it was kind of like everything stopped. And you could almost sense Van Dijk going, well, you know what? All the best going past me. And try and do that to me that he just did to Alexander-Arnold. And Rashford just kind of stopped in his boots. Whereas Konate, for me, he's a little bit desperate to make a challenge. You know, making a challenge is really the last resort on most places on the field. You know, you want to avoid making challenges. You want to be in a better position where you can intercept it. Or you know, it's all about decision-making. He just looks a little raw, and he wants to show that he's big and strong and he can make challenges. But he had a good game. Steve, but he needs to watch the guy standing next to him.
Frank?
I think it's not fair. I think it's not fair to compare anybody with Van Dijk. Van Dijk is unique and is absolutely exceptional. You should compare Konate with maybe Matip or Gomez if you want to make a clear comparison and a fair one. And I think for a first big game that he had to play for Liverpool, he did very well and coped with the situation very well for me. So yeah, very encouraging. I think the Scottish have to stop thinking that the French are not good, and they have to think that we back them up at a certain point against the English.
No,
so they shouldn't
Frank,
forget
right.
that.
No, Frank, you're right. It's probably a little unfair. I wasn't meaning to put them together as a, you know, one against the other. I was just saying maybe if they sat down and Van Dijk could talk to the young guy and point out some things that he may have done wrong and that he in the same situation did right, and that would help Konate. So I wasn't really trying to compare them.
It was like the school report could do better.
Yeah.
Promising that?
Did well.
You saw promise there?
Yes.
Okay.
Did well, but could do better. Yeah.
All right, Frank, let's talk about another defender then.
Yeah.
Since his move to United, has Maguire justified his status as the world's most expensive defender, undroppable, and club captain within 6 months? 9 goals from the last 3 games alone, including all 5 today, have come down his side.
Now that's appalling, and it's in a way it's very sad. You know, there isn't a union of central defenders like there is one on the keepers. But you know, when I first saw Maguire, he was playing as a midfielder when he played for the national team. Then I saw him playing for Leicester, and I think it was encouraging performances. But when I saw him signing for 80 something million, I was very surprised. But it's a deal that you have when you have an English player playing for an English club and going to another English club. I don't know that kind of price and why those deals are so important, but it's what happened when you have those kind of deals. But Maguire is a big boy, is a slow defender, and people, they start knowing him and they know how to handle with him. And on top of it, he just came back from an injury. He only played 2 games. He had an appalling game, horrendous game against Leicester. But that was an excuse because he was just coming back. But today, that was horrible. I really wonder why Bailly doesn't play. They don't want to play Lindelof anymore. They signed a new contract to Bailly. Why they don't try him? Why they don't play 3 at the back with Maguire, you know, maybe playing a little bit like a sweeper, I don't know. Try to find something else because the guy is lost. He can't cope with the pace of most strikers. And that's sad for him. I feel sad when I see a defender not coping with the others, being in the middle of nowhere. I feel sad.
All right, Frank, I'm sticking with you for the next one. Is there any chance Pogba is a Man United player next season. He always seems to be linked to a move away from the club and he never leaves.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I don't know what's going on. And, you know, seeing that he didn't start today for the most important game of the season for Manchester United made me think that that may be the end of something for Paul Pogba. I think he must be very upset. He was frustrated. This way maybe he was red-carded, sorry. And I think if Manchester United carries on like that, playing like that, I think he's going to go.
Premier League insider, Detective Don, can you shed any light on this situation?
I can't shed any light. I will make some calls. I'll investigate. But when you get dropped, Kay,
we need some gossips.
I'll find some, Frank. I'll find some. I'll make some calls. But when you get dropped in this sort of game,
thank you,
that hurts your pride. That dents your ego. You'll be on the phone, or he'll be on the phone to his agent going, what's happening at PSG? What's happening at Real Madrid? Is there any gossip? What's happening at Juventus? Is there a way back? He won't be happy with that. And depending on who the new United manager might tell us whether Pogba's staying on or not. But I think highly unlikely he stays on.
And then Don will tell us, you know, you didn't hear it from me, but don't tell anyone this, but all right. Yeah.
I would love to have been in the room when Ollie said, Paul, can I have a word? How do you turn around to Paul Pogba and say, you're not starting, you're going to be on the bench? And the guy doesn't go ballistic?
You're not starting again.
Any proper player I've ever played with, in a situation like this, the biggest game of the season, you're the biggest earner, you're supposed to be the guy, particularly in the middle of the park, and the manager goes, yeah, we're not going to start you today. Surely you go mental. And you clearly
that's why I got sent off.
And I think Dom is being kind. You call Mendes and go, by the way, just to let you know, get me out of here as quick as you can. I've had enough.
Don, we want some inside info on the next edition. All right, Don. All right.
I think his agent is Mila, is Raiola. He's not Mendes, but I'm not sure.
Mino Raiola. Yes, you are right. It is Mino Raiola.
Yeah.
Oops.
Don, what's more embarrassing? Barca losing four Clásicos in a row for the first time since 1936. United getting thrashed by their fiercest rivals in their own backyard, 5-0. Or yeah. Everton conceding a hat-trick against Josh King at Goodison.
I think I'd have to lean towards Everton. I'd have to lean towards Everton. I mean, they got mullered against West Ham last week, and that was a proper eye-opener. Declan Rice was just amazing against Decore. It was a brilliant battle. But you show me anyone that forecasted Watford would go to Goodison Park and score five. I could not grasp that one.
Dan, the worst is Liverpool won 5-0 against Watford last week away from home, and Everton loses 5-2 against. So it means that you're going to lose 10-0 against Liverpool in the next game we play against them.
That's good man maths, that, Frank. I like that.
Yeah, don't be taking the mathematician work. That's Don's, Detective Don. Just he has many faces. All right.
Yeah.
Stevie, last question for you. Ale mentioned the other day that if you were both playing in today's game over 90 minutes, he could get you booked and possibly thrown out using his talent for drawing fouls.
Not a chance.
What would happen in a million years?
Not a chance in a million years. Any good defender can suss him out in 2 seconds. He wants to feel you. So you stay away. And he's too busy trying to hold on to you or feel you that his control wasn't particularly fantastic either. So you just stay close enough without touching him that when it bounces off, you nip in and take it away. And then you go like that when he's lying on the ground, not getting a foul. Nah, 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 nah. Take that.
Well, he was very, very confident, what I will say, that he could have done that. But I guess not.
Easy peasy.
Anyway, thanks for joining us on the latest edition. Be sure to always watch us. ESPN FC is available 7 days a week. We've got to let Detective Don go back to his research.